Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of PayTech Talk. I'm your host, Emily Robita, and today we have quite a special episode. We are doing a Women in Payments episode, and we have some very special guests, so we will go around and do an introduction. Lena, if you would like to start.
Yeah, of course. Hi, I'm Lena, and I am my co-founder and COO of Chino, and we're allowing people to pay together in a different way.
Hi, everyone. I'm Diana. I am a co-founder of Prosper Crypto Exchange, and I have my own consulting company, like management consulting.
Hi, everybody. My name is Esther Groen. I'm from Holland, born and raised, proud mom of two boys, and been in banking, fintech, and payments for almost 20 years now. I'm in the advisory board of a network of women called EWPN. I'm an independent supervisory board member for two organizations. One is Verifone Payments and Currents for the transition of Ideal. And that's in short who I am and what I do.
Nice. So I kind of want to start off first by talking about how you got into the payments sector and the payment sphere and like what about it kind of interested each of you. Esther, if you would like to start.
Yeah, I'm the oldest one. So my journey in payments indeed started almost 20 years ago, and it was actually a little bit by accident because I started out as a headhunter. Then I went into funding and grants, and one of my customers was ABN AMRO at the time, and they basically introduced me to payments, and I didn't have a clue about payments, but I was a good account manager and I could do sales. So that's how I kind of ended up in payments. Yeah. Got a crash course in cash and liquidity management, and off I went. And I was the first saleswoman in the wholesale banking part, so global transaction services. And that was actually also the idea of my manager at the time. He wanted a woman in his team. So that's how I actually got the job. Well, I didn't. Okay. You know what I mean. So that was actually my introduction into finance, into payments, which was very cold turkey and still very traditional at the time.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So as mentioned, I was one of the first of the few sales women.
Yeah.
And I stuck with the bank for almost 10 years. So it transitioned into RBS, the Royal Bank of Scotland. So I did sales for approximately 5 years, then moved to business management, so particularly transformation, and then the client service account management team. So I moved all the way up until the director level, which was also not a very common thing for women. So it's interesting to see how the world has changed. And I'm happy to see these two young ladies moving into this space. Because in my time, it was just, you know, it was frowned upon to work at home. It was frowned upon to be flexible. Mm-hmm. I always worked full time, but it was not expected. As soon as I got kids, everybody expected me to go part time. Mm-hmm. So it was just a whole different atmosphere. But
you stayed resilient and kept with it.
That's one of the lessons. You just kind of keep in there, stay focused. And then I moved to consulting. And then ended up in the fintech world, which I think is a great place to be.
Fun place to be for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's funny because I also like rolled into this whole payments thing by accident. I have a background in criminal law, I worked for the public prosecutor for a couple of years. And then I decided working for a public organization, it just really isn't my thing. So I went traveling, and when I came back, my flatmate at the time worked for a payment service provider. And I never even heard about payment service providers. So I was like, I have no idea what you guys do, but okay, let's
give it a shot.
Exactly. Let's explore here and see if it's interesting or not. So I had this chat with the compliance manager at the time. And I thought a financial institution, this must be, your regular people, your white guys in suits, hierarchy, all these things. So I came to the office and there was this huge life-size stormtrooper in the office in the hallway. Maybe this is a different type of company than I'm used to. So that was like my first introduction into fintech. Mm-hmm. It was super interesting, how do you say it? It was such a a challenging environment because I was one of the first compliance officers there. So you just had the compliance manager and then me, the compliance officer. And I had so much freedom to do whatever it was that I wanted to do. And you were involved in every aspect of the organization. So I got to learn a lot about compliance time. So that was a really great introduction into the payments world. It's like, okay, this is interesting. This is not your typical banking world or something. So it was definitely a good way to start in a new environment.
Yeah, for sure.
So it seems that I'm not the only one who does not come from the payments background. I thought I have an untraditional background. So I studied architecture and I worked as an architect for 10 years. I focused on human behavior in architecture. Like, I really wanted to know after I graduated why people behave in certain ways. And that, in a way, dragged me into, you know, like even on a website, on an app, how people... Why do they decide to do certain things? And how I ended up in payments was also, like, I would never have imagined myself, you know, when I was young, that I would be in payments. I mean,
it's not like always, a little girl's dream.
Exactly. Like, I always liked math. I was always the calculator for my friends whenever we go to dinners. But I never imagined myself to be, you know, in this industry. So I met with my co-founder 3 years ago and he said, I have this problem with my boyfriend, which is we never are able to split up payments. And we spend the weekends trying to settle up and solve for this. And it was like, actually, this is a problem that I had when I had roommates with my friends on every single trip when we go to dinners. And even in my culture, I come from Palestine, you know, this is a taboo. You cannot talk about money and everyone is willing to pay for the others, even if you're not financially very well off. So we started, you know, thinking, brainstorming, talking to people. And for my surprise, it was a problem that a lot of people related to. So we started on this venture and it's been 3 years and the rest is history.
That's awesome. So I do have kind of a question. Since you all have like quite a lot of experience in the industry, and I think from different angles, there can definitely be some advantages to being a woman in the space, you know, especially if you have the opportunity, like you said, with your manager, wanting a woman for the different perspective. I think that that's like such a great angle to come from, but there's also so many disadvantages and difficulties within such a male-dominated space. So I don't know if you guys have any advices to other women who are trying to get into the space and getting through maybe some of these roadblocks.
Difficult, like disadvantages. I'm not really sure whether there's something really specific that I can say. Definitely in my experience, what I find really difficult at the start of moving, you know, into a new working environment was that I knew what I could do, but you don't have the experience to show for it.
Right.
So I accepted, for example, a lower salary because I was like, okay, I want to prove myself still because I'm going to work in a new environment and I don't have any experience to show for it. So I'll accept this. And then, you know, you expect that you can grow once you can show that you actually know what you're doing. So for me, it was very difficult to grow into a salary that I thought was fitting for my, you know, knowledge, experience, because at the time they would say like, oh yeah, but if you look at the percentage of your increase was with a really high percentage. I was like, yeah, but if my starting point is lower, then you can increase with a high percentage, but that still doesn't mean that I'm earning what I should earn.
Right. Yeah.
So it was really difficult to grow into that like salary level. And I think that what my advice would be, even if you're moving into a new environment, know what you can do. Even if your experience is completely unrelated, it doesn't mean that you can take from that experience into your new role. Yeah. So don't accept something that's, you know, below your level. Know what you can do and then grow from there.
Yeah, I think there's still a lot of unconscious bias. I agree with you that particularly when you kind of move up into organizations, the masculine way of doing business and managing teams and taking decisions becomes more and more dominant. So it's more difficult to kind of stand out, make yourself visible and strike the right balance, right? Because I think women, it's really difficult to do it right because if you're too dominant, then yeah, before you know, you get the ticket, you're a feminist or you're bitchy or whatever. And if you comply too much, you're not ambitious enough, or you can't take decisions, or you don't show leadership skills. So it's really difficult to do it right. And I think also to your point in terms of pay gap, it's a reality. I mean, we can talk about this, but it's truly a reality. And I do see that organizations are more and more aware of it.
Yeah.
They take the appropriate decisions. But the fact that you do not negotiate, or maybe not negotiate that hard, is one. On the other hand, I think they accept the prospect of success for men easier than the prospect of success for women. So where you say you need to accept, hey, you prove yourself first, I think that's less relevant for younger men who are at the same point. So I think that's where the unconscious bias still is very much at play. So that's culture, that's patterns that are really difficult to change and to break. And I agree with you. I think it's really important that you're very true and clear on what your value is and that you're able to sell it.
Yeah.
I often see that lots of women don't have a proper elevator pitch. You need to have actually a couple of elevator pitches to whom, depending on to whom you're talking to, that really kind of demonstrate what your worth is, what's your view, what's your ambition, what would you like to achieve, who are you, why should I do business with you? It's not difficult, but it requires thinking and it requires a little bit of a plan. And I think that's where women are, they can actually do better.
I think from a founder perspective, I saw and I heard from a lot of VC friends that I have is that when women pitch to them, usually we are not very good at selling the vision. So we try to de-risk it for the for the investors, saying, you know what, if you give me like this dollar, it's going to become $3 or $4 because I'm going to do 1, 2, 3. I'm going to grow in this way. I'm going to grow in that way. Whereas when they talk to male founders, they're like, we're going to take over everything. The fintech industry is going to be under my armpit. So like it's different. But in the same time, I'm always wondering, like, also, like, Esther, for you, like you said, you're expected to behave in a certain way when you hold a certain position, in especially in the payments industry. I saw this when I worked as an architect, that I was always expected to behave as a man for them to, one, respect me.
Don't do
me,
it. Exactly.
Second, to have confidence in me. And that was always my question when I go back home. Like, why do I have to behave in certain ways? And I see this is replicating again here when, you know, from talking to investors to talking to payment providers to partners in general, you're always expected to behave in a certain way. And commenting on your takeaway on the gender pay, we see this with our users because we split the payments between couples mostly. And we see that most of the men are, you know, they are earning more. And it doesn't, it's not because you came from a different industry. It's the reality. And this is the world we live in, unfortunately. So yeah, there's there's a lot here. But yeah, Esther, like I'm really curious to know, like how, you know, how would you behave in this position?
Yeah, it's, I think I explained. So when I was working at the bank, which was very white, male, gray suits, and I was often maybe one or two women in the room. At some point, I actually decided to change my outfit, so be bright, because I was so aware that I needed to be visible, that they needed to at least see that I was in the room.
Yeah.
And and I think it was a different time from now, right? So I think with Me Too, and it's way more sensitive and way more fragile as 20 years ago, right? Where the jokes kind of, you know, I like a good joke. I mean, I've got a thick skin and but you really need to make yourself visible. I think it is about striking the balance. You need to be aware of your audience. You don't have to comply. You don't have to become a man or be masculine, but you need to be at least aware on how to behave and be effective. And I think the fact that you are a woman is a uniqueness that you should use, you should exploit it. And I think this is what I've learned over the years, that I can achieve great results by being a little bit different, by having a bit of a different approach, by inclusion, by being more consensus-based in how I make my decisions. But having said that, it has resulted in me deciding that this was maybe not the company that I wanted to work for because it didn't work.
Yeah.
Because change was too slow. That's also a consequence that you kind of need to be aware of, that it does at some point force you to change or leave or kind of decide, okay, this is not where I can prosper. This is not where I can grow. This is not where I can develop. And I think loyalty has a price, and it should never be at a cost of your own ambitions and your own development. And I think that's also where women tend to be. They need to think about more about themselves on how to get where they want to go to. And if the organization or the teams that they're operating in is not supporting, leave.
Yeah.
Move, make a decision, and take hold of your own destiny a little bit more.
That's very good advice, because I feel like it can be hard to know kind of when that limit is.
Yeah.
It's quite a difficult angle to approach.
Yeah. And I think at the point, especially in the investment side, I mean, it's still staggering, and that I think 1 or 2% of the available capital goes to female founders, which is ridiculous. I mean, it's such a clear business case that half of the world is women. They're underserved. Women are underserved when it comes to finance and payments. So it's just a very clear cut business case.
They did a study once with the same pitch decks, and one they did voiceover of men and the other voiceover of women. And one had videos of like different pictures of who's pitching. And the end result was, one, the men voices one over, and two, the good-looking man one over the no pictures of men. So there is a bias, and I'm always asking myself, we all know we're biased to different things, so how can you be, you know, more, I think, fair to your industry as well, especially if you're in a decision-making position. And I'm always like, when we have to pitch for VC women, I always feel that we have to de-risk it for them, because they also have to de-risk it for their peers or for their male partners, because the amount of questions that we're asked are definitely more the amount of questions that our male peers are asked, and same for them. So I feel like we're all in this together. We're all in this cycle. We all have to prove that we can win. The questions that we are asked as women is how you're not going to fail. Whereas when they ask men, they ask them, how are you going to succeed?
Yeah, exactly.
So that really makes a difference. I think the question is how we all women can, you know, be in this together, because we all know that the world is biased in general. Yeah. And as you said, 2% or less of the investments go to females. And it's not because women are not there and they're not trying. It's just because it's not getting to them.
Yeah. Right? Talking about bias, like I had this discussion some time ago, and it was about, you know, the requirement to have more females in board positions or supervisory board positions. And my counterpart was like, oh yeah, but it's not good to have that as a requirement, because that will make sure that we get women in positions that, you know, are not fit for the role or anything. So we had this whole discussion about bias, because if you only have males in your board positions, then they are very likely to also elect another male when a position opens, because that is just the way it is. You're looking for, you know, common ground, and it's easier to find common ground in somebody who looks like you than someone who doesn't.
Definitely.
So my idea is that we need this requirement to be able to move to more evenly divided roles and positions, so you can ensure that whenever a new position opens up, then you can find the right person, regardless of gender, regardless of anything. But we need to go over this hurdle to make sure that we even have females at the top, like in board positions.
I think it's a difficult, because I also agree with that statement that you kind of do have to have that and like push people in, but kind of a difficult thing to convince people of when you're talking about it. But I think that was a great way to show your perspective on it, just being like, okay, but here there is the bias, and understanding the bias is very, very important.
It's really about kind of changing cultures and, and patterns, which is really difficult. And it's not because, you know, I was never in favor of quotas. Now I am. And I'm actually benefiting from it, right? I mean, I'm now in two supervisory boards because everybody's aware that they need to change this. So, hallelujah. And I love it and I know that I can do it. So it's not that I'm not the right candidate. I just now kind of start to surface and become more visible. But it's very much a top-down approach. And I don't believe only in a top-down approach. I think it should be, like for ladies like yourselves, when you start, it needs to be a bottom-up and a top-down approach. It needs to be kind of completely integrated. And this starts really about what are we expecting from women when they want to make careers. And I think in the Netherlands, it's actually even, well, different maybe from other countries. We've got so many women that are working part-time. I mean, first of all, you can't build a career on a part-time job. I'm sorry, it's just not possible. So that needs to drop, and it needs to be acceptable that women do have full-time jobs and want to make a career. So that's, I think, something that you want to educate, not just women, also boys and men. I mean, it's not something that we need women to make aware of. It's also something very much a collective approach, and that needs to be kind of in every layer, in every aspect, starting from education to when you start to choose your specialty or your profession going forward. And we've ended up in payments kind of by accident. But I mean, everybody kind of ends up in their job by accident. Most of them do anyway. But it's not just one button. It's more buttons. And it's it requires way more of a collective approach to change this. And it's a difficult one.
Can I comment on the part-time thing? Because I am actually building a career on a part-time job.
You are!
I mean, that is like the whole idea of doing something for yourself. That's the reason why I started my own company. I was also a co-founder. So it's kind of having that freedom to be able to use my time the way that I see fit.
Yeah.
I have a 2.5 months old newborn, so you know, I have to divide my time when he's sleeping or something, you know. So for me, the whole thing about, you know, being able to be a fractional board member, fractional supervisory board member, all these things are ideal. It gives me like the flexibility that I need. It gives me the opportunity to be involved in different companies, in different positions. And you know, if on a Saturday I feel like, oh, I have the energy, I'm feeling inspired, I'm going to work a little bit, then I do that.
Yeah.
And I'm not restricted to be at the office to show that I'm there or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
So I kind of like the whole part-time thing, but maybe I shouldn't call it part-time, but just call it like flexible
working.
That's it.
Yeah, I think it's flexible working.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're just able to deliver whatever it is that you want to deliver in the time that you see fit.
Yeah.
And it really works for me. It works for my clients, my assignments. So for me, the flexible thing is just awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, and I completely get your decision. I think it's more flexibility than part-time.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that you've started your own business, I truly applaud it. But it also, to me, still demonstrates that organizations still don't get how to kind of make sure that you are still able to do when you want to start a family. And I think that's still broken.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that's, to me, you're actually a great example of why women leave the financial industry at a certain point in time, because they're not facilitated or supported in doing this the right way.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I still see a lot of companies also going back to the whole, oh, you have to be at the office 4 days a week.
Yeah.
You have to do this. You have to do that. It's just not fitting.
After we tried the opposite words.
Yeah, exactly.
So we understood that it's not about productivity, just to be in an office like from 9 to 5. Or,
It's more control.
It's control-based and it's not trust-based, right? I mean, the starting principles that you want to control. But I don't know exactly what you're trying to control here.
Exactly.
I think it's very much, this is a way larger trend that you see within society and how our economy is working, that we want to control and measure things instead of trusting people to do the right thing.
Yeah, I think
Yeah, the pandemic also clearly, when it came to like the work-life balance type of thing, there was proof that it did benefit a lot of women and a lot of women who wanted to start families or needed to balance certain things if they're a caretaker or whatnot. But then, yeah, now it kind of feels like that was proven. And then now it's going back a little bit with being like, nope, you have to be in for the 9 to 5. And it's like, okay, well, what if that doesn't work? What if you do have a newborn? What if you do have to take care of a parent? How are you going to balance that? Because like women are still a lot of the times the caregiver in the family. So it gets tricky to want to also build your whole professional portfolio around that. There's only 24 hours in a day. Like it's difficult. So moving on, or actually circling back just a little bit, because you did talk about like an elevator pitch.
Yeah.
And I've heard that a lot. I'm in the first year of my career, so I'm very, very new to everything. But I've heard the term elevator pitch a lot, especially when it comes to networking and how important it is and how much, I guess, it facilitates a lot more opportunities and things like that. But when you actually ask for advice, sometimes it's just like, oh, just pitch yourself. Like, just do it. And it's like, I don't know. So I don't know if you have like a certain angle or a certain advice that you could give to somebody like me who's trying to polish up their elevator pitch a little bit.
Well, I always try to think about what would I like to hear from somebody else. Mm-hmm. So I just try to kind of flip it around a little bit. So that's one. Second, if I want to do business with somebody, what would I like to hear from them? Or what would I like to hear? But I'm a person, right? So I like to kind of understand a little bit who I have in front of me. So not just what you can do, but you know, who you are, what's your personality, what makes you you.
Yeah.
And you don't have to kind of share. And this may be a little bit Dutch, I get that. but I always mention that I'm a proud mom of two boys and live in the Netherlands. It just gives me a little bit of something else than, you know, I'm in payments. Yeah. That's what I like.
Yeah.
So kind of introduce yourself, who you are, what you stand for. And then second is, why should I be interested in you? And that's not just what you can do. I personally like to hear, what would you like to achieve? What drives you? Mm-hmm. What makes you special or stand out in a different way? Which can be how you see things. What would you like to achieve with your company? So basically, what makes you tick? And then the other question is, what do you want from me? How can I help you? What is your expectation? Do I need to connect you? Do you want a job? Do you need funds? Always link it to something that kind of results in a follow-up question.
I think it's interesting what you said, because for me, for example, again, as a founder, I want to connect with, you know, people in general in my industry. It doesn't mean that I always have an ask for them. It's nice to know what people, you know, like, what's your daily struggle? What's your positive day? Whatever. So,
but that's your ask.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's not about like, you know, I want to be connected to this person, but it's just like, I want to know who's there around me. Like, how can we in general be there for each other?
I think that might actually be one of the advantages of being a woman, because we are usually more interesting in understanding what is the other person about, what are their thoughts, what are their challenges, and understanding the other person, whereas a male would think like, what can I offer?
Yeah.
It's gonna be like, oh yeah, I can do this, I can solve this for you, do that. Whereas we're just trying to understand what is the other person looking for. But elevator pitches, yeah, I'm terrible at that. So I don't really do that. I just try to have a conversation, and then at one point you're
just slow. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you just roll into it. It's the same as with this podcast. I forgot to prep. So that is me doing things a little bit impulsively and you know, go from there. But for networking, I mean, I don't go to many networking events or conferences, all that stuff. I think LinkedIn would be like a proper medium to like increase your reach, to increase your network, go from there. And then you won't need an elevator pitch. You just need like consistent content and knowing what you're about. But it's the same, because it's also about, who are you? What can you offer? What are your values? What makes you tick? And then you broadcast that on LinkedIn and you go go from there.
Yeah, we are kind of shifting towards, I think, across all industries, but I think the finance industry was a little bit slower to it as somebody who works in social media a lot. But you are seeing a lot more creators or even just people on LinkedIn start to become creators almost by accident, just based off of sharing and giving opinions and selling themselves in that way. And I do think it's a cool medium to kind of start to turn towards utilizing, as well as, of course, the traditional networking.
Yeah, but call me old or old-fashioned or dinosaur or boomer, as my kids are saying. But I still very much believe in person-to-person connection.
Yeah. Of course. It's different.
It's actually different because I can now kind of look you in the eye. I really kind of feel your energy. And that's something that I think is important, especially when you're always a little bit the one that's the minority. You need to kind of, invest more. And it's something that you can simply practice. It's really something that you can practice. And when you have it, it's kind of there and it's really easy. But you have to kind of practice it. I once did an exercise where you kind of had to tell something about yourself and you had like 5 minutes and then they brought it back to 4 to 3 to 1 minute, which basically forces you to kind of get to the core.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was actually a good exercise because you really start to think, who am I? Yeah, what makes me different or what makes me unique and why am I interesting to have this conversation? It's a good exercise. But and that's why I think also a network like EDLVPN to me has had a lot of value, because these are women who exactly understand what you're facing. They either have already experienced it or are about to experience it. So there's always kind of a common ground to where you can kind of connect and share things. And they also help you progress in your career. So I'm a true believer in mentorships and sponsors, in networks, because, and not just women, also, because I think if I look back, I've had some great male sponsors and also female sponsors, of course. You need both to kind of, get where you want to get to.
Well, okay, this has been a great episode. I think we're going to wrap up. There's some great takeaways from this, I think, talking about the bias and talking about kind of networking and how to, leverage yourself as a woman in the space, and how important that is. So thank you all for coming. And this has been PayTech Talk.
You've just been listening to PayTech Talk, the podcast about payments. PayTech Talk is brought to you by Cognito Amsterdam. Thanks for listening.